You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome into this Wednesday edition of the Locked On Pacers podcast. I am Tony East, one of the hosts of the show with the West Indianapolis Community News and over at 8.9 seconds. And I haven't done this in forever, and I'm very excited. I get to talk about a basketball game. I know that sounds so stupid because I talk about the Pacers all the time. But Adam got to recap the Lakers game, and we didn't really recap the Kings because we had the big quarter season review pod. And I just haven't talked about a basketball game in a week. And finally, today, I get to talk about a basketball game. The Pacers played against the Bulls last night in a very ugly game. pretty much everything about the way the Pacers played was kind of gross. But you know what? We'll look back on it at the end of the season and say they won, and that's really all that matters. The 96-90 against the Bulls, only scoring 96 is bad. Against Zach LaVine, only giving up 90 is good. I say Zach LaVine because he's their only good offensive player. He only had 13, though, so maybe I'm wrong in that regard. But yes, the Pacers scraped out an ugly win at home against Chicago. And, you know, I think the theme for me when I wrote about the game for game grades for every player was ugliness. The team was 6 of 22 from 3, that's 27.3%. And if you take out Darren Collison being 3 of 4 from 3, which we will do a whole segment on Darren Collison, they are 3 of 18. So that's 1/6, that's 16% from 3, that's terrible. No one hit more than 1 except for DC. In fact, Holiday hit one, Corey Joseph hit one, and Bojan hit one. Everybody else missed all their threes. That's ugly. They could not get anything going from the outside. Their spacing was all mucked up. That's why they only scored 96, despite not having a terrible number of shots. And they kind of did. They turned it over a ton, 18 times to be exact. That is brutal. You can't have that. 5 of those coming from Tyreke Evans, 4 coming from Sabonis. The two got, to be fair, those are the two guys who have the ball the most, but that's still a lot of turnovers, even if you have the ball a lot. 4 turnovers is a lot. That was ugly. They did a good job getting to the line. They got 24 free throws. The Bulls only took 5. That's a lot of the reason they won, but those are ugly. In a game, they work well, they're effective, but they're also aesthetically ugly. And then the Pacers wore gray and the Bulls wore white. So overall, lots of ugly things in this basketball game. But again, what matters is the Pacers won, found a way to win the basketball game despite a lot of meh performances. I think only 2 or 3 guys, I would say, were good in this game. Like good enough for me to be like, yes, this was a good game for them, not just like they played well. I want to do segments for both of them, but I'm going to do a generality here just so I can keep doing game generalities. Darren Collison was one of them. Finally, I mean, holy moly, the entire season of toughness for him. Finally, his three-point percentage went up over 2% in this game. He was 3 or 4 from deep. He had 23 points on only 7 shots. His true shooting percentage was like 150% or something like that. I can't do math that fast, but I wish I could. But yeah, he was amazing in this game. And he played 35 minutes. They even had him take some of Tyreke's time and Corey Joseph's time and Holiday's time. Like, he played the most of any guard, which was good. He had all 8 of his free throws. He had 8 rebounds. The long misses from the Bulls were carrying out to him. And he was using that to push in transition and create other opportunities that got the Pacers to the foul line. That's why they had 24 free throws. His defense was good enough on I just did this on a pod, like, literally yesterday with Adam. Archie Diacono, who finished the game with 0 points, 1 rebound, 1 assist, 3 turnovers. So, solid enough job by Darren Collison on him. He was a minus 10. And we really just needed to see this because he had been terrible. He had a clutch 3 against the Kings. Other than that, he had been literally terrible for a while now, outside of showing some defensive flashes. So, good stuff from Collison. Sabonis was 9 points, 11 rebounds, 3 steals, but 4 turnovers. You know, he was good, but not, like, amazing good. Turner's the other guy I was going to say was amazing good. His defense was so, so massive in this game. The starters did not really play good D as a whole. A lot of them did not play good D, especially Thaddeus Young, who was having trouble with Larry Markkanen on the perimeter, but Turner did a great job protecting the rim still. That's part of why LaVine was only 6 of 15. That's part of why guys who normally drive, like Archie Diacono and Holiday, Justin Holiday, that is, struggled to score around the basket. He had 5 blocks in the game. He finished with 18 points and 11 rebounds. He really did a good job of putting it all together and doing all the things that I think he's personally asked to do, which is score points. When he gets this many shots, he needs to be the team's one of the team's leading scorers, and he was. Play great defense, and if the ball comes your way when you happen to be around the basket, get the rebound. And they had him in the post more, and look at that. He got 11 rebounds. Look how that works, everybody. So that's a good game from Miles Turner. And a good game from Darren Collison, and a pretty good but not as good as those two game from Sabonis. It's noteworthy that Sabonis and Turner closed the game together. I think that's the first time that's happened ever, because Thad is a good player, and he usually is closing games. But tough stretch of games for Thad. He had 6 points in this one. He did not look great. His defense was not terrific on Larry Markkinen either. So not a poster game for Thaddeus Young, but I'm sure he'll bounce back. He's a good veteran player. And he doesn't seem like he's down on his own play. I think he just is in a slump, and he'll recover. Something I noticed in this game, and it's the only player audio I have, unfortunately, but it's still great. this is so random. So, like, it was an ugly game, and, like, guys were kind of, like, not passive, that's the wrong word. Like, I think they kind of thought, like, eh, what's going on? And every timeout or every commercial break or any stoppage, like, Kylo Quinn is up, first guy off the bench, running around the court, hyping up his teammates. And I noticed it. And I wish I noticed more things like that that weren't, like, on the court. And I was pumped. And I asked him about it after the game. And it was fun to hear what he had to say. So listen to Kylo Quinn in the locker room. You're always the first guy to jump off the bench when there's a timeout or anything like that. You're running up, high-fiving everybody. And games like this, when you don't play, is that your thing to be energetic? Don't get on the court for minutes. You're still helping, obviously. Is that your way of being helpful?
Staying engaged. You know, I know guys look for, you know, they look over towards the bench for some type of, you know, good job. And when I'm on the floor, when I get my chance, I'm sure those guys will do the same for me. So I've just always been that guy, you know. I know who needs to get going. We practice against each other every day, so you kind of know.
So I enjoyed that. I enjoy Kylo Quinn being a hype man. He's really embraced the veteran role on this team. He is a genuinely great dude, and like he just said there, he's with these dudes every day. He knows who needs the pick-me-ups, and he did a great job of helping dudes in this game, even when he wasn't really playing. So that was good. Two other guys I want to talk about just because. Aaron Holiday, who's been in the news a lot due to being a rookie and playing well, had some rookie moments on defense tonight and only scored 5 points against his brother. Cool moment to see them swapping jerseys after the game, which is why I wanted to talk about him. But Justin played 41 minutes, which was crazy. The Bulls just do not have wings. But yeah, Holiday, not a great game. I don't know if his brother playing had anything to do with it, but his defense did not look very good, and he only had 5 points. And then Doug McDermott, who had a great road trip. I was really stoked. They might be finally trying to integrate him a little bit more. They got some good stuff running for him, and he had 2 points. So I don't know what happened there, but they won the game, so I can't really whine. And it's not like Doug was terrible on defense in this game, but I think a lot of that's because the Bulls have no wings. So, yeah, it was a game that happened, and it was very gross. But you know what? Winning these gross games, like winning a division game, I'm always happy. You always have to be happy when those kind of wins happen. So I want to talk about Turner and Darren Collison in the next segment, and then I want to talk about Domantas Sabonis destroying Jabari Parker in the segment following. So stick around. We got more to talk about this game, and we'll be right back after a short break. So I wanted to talk about the two dudes who played the best in Collison and Turner, but I really want to talk more about Collison than Turner, because Turner was good for... Not that Turner having good games isn't important. It is, and he was great in this game, and you know, you need that kind of thing. And people are you know what's funny is the people that I'm tweeting, like, final. I tweeted after the game, or Turner got his 10th rebound with like 45 seconds left or something like that. And I tweeted, like, thank God Turner got his 10th rebound. That makes it a good game now. And that joke stems from two things. It's the people on Twitter who are always yelling about rebounds, which is not really Turner's role anyway. And it's also the joke of Russell Westbrook when he would getting the triple doubles in his MVP season. People would always joke that he didn't have a good game if he didn't get a triple double. So when Miles Turner, it's the same thing with double doubles. And it's funny that the people who the joke is about with the rebounding are the people that respond. But it doesn't matter. I mean, the way you want to evaluate players is the way you evaluate players. We're all watching the same thing. But yeah, Turner did well in this game and on the road trip, which is what I was getting at, which is why it was less why I want to focus less on him and more on Collison, because Turner had that, you know, good closing against the Suns and did some good stuff against the Kings, so much that people were like upset with Nate for subbing in Sabonis for offense and rebounding over Turner, which was interesting. And it's a big deal that Turner and Sabonis closed the game together. It really is. Thad's first time out at the end of a game in who knows how long, and they did a good job. Nate talked about, you know, he wanted Turner in there because of his great defense in this game, and he wanted Sabonis in there for the rebounding. They were both offering exactly that. Sabonis had 11 rebounds. He always has a lot. He's good at that. He's very good at that. And yeah, I appreciated Nate being open about that, and it was a good matchup for it with, I'll talk about Jabari later with Sabonis, and then with Wendell and Lowry. I mean, you give up some marking and threes, sure, but neither of them are really good at the skills that the Turner and Sabonis can get around. So it worked well for those two, and it made Turner be able to play big minutes and play well. But Collison, whoa, boy. All year long for me with him, I tried to investigate this. I've been like, why are his shots not going in? Because he has a slow release, and maybe it's a tiny bit slower. Like, age is playing some part, but like, age and shooting don't really correlate that much to me. Like a lot of other skills, age and it connect, but like age and jump shooting, not really. Just because you do it so many times over the course of your life that like you it's just a rhythm thing. And of the guys who have led the league in 3-point percentage over the last decade, none of them have had a drop like what Collison has seen this year in percentage. So I didn't think it was age related, and his form looks the same, just maybe a tiny bit slower. And I did a binomial distribution to see the odds of him hitting this poorly given how well he shot the three over his career. And it's like the chances of him hitting, I did it before the Kings game, so it was 14 out of 46. The chance of him hitting 14 out of 46 or lower was like 14%. So it was overwhelmingly more likely that he would not shoot that bad. And because I couldn't find an explanation, it was like, okay, he's just missing shots. That's just what's happening. And 14% is not like improbable. You know, that's a thing that could happen. And it did. You know, I don't want to say that this is some anomaly. It's just that he was missing shots. That's what it is. But that also means to me that eventually they're going to go down. And finally today, after that nerdy rant, they did. They went in. The ball went in the basket. And that is what you need to see from a guy who's been slumping for much of the year. Hit that clutch three at the end of the Kings game too, so that's just that's great. If he can get on a run from the outside shooting and stop shot faking out of them, I think that would help the Pacers' spacing a lot. Wow, that was funny. I might have to start tweeting that one out. And that was great. Just being able to knock down that outside shot helped him. And the Bull, Shaq Harrison is an okay defender. He only played 13 minutes though. Cameron Payne and Archie Diakono were not good defenders. Especially in transition for Cameron Payne. And that meant when Darren Collison got the ball on one of the many rebounds the Pacers grabbed from their big man, they could just give it to him and he could push. And he was pretty good at that because their transition defense wasn't good, which was great to see. That got him and other guys to the line quite frequently. And his 8 rebounds are also amazing. I mean, none of them were like Darren Collison's not some crazy rebounder, but he was in good positions and stuff like that. You know, he just did a lot of stuff well. And that's really important for a guy whose season has been not like that at all. He really needed a game like this to get back on track and gain some confidence. 23 points on 7 shots is really crazy. Like, really, really crazy. That's like over 1.5 points per shot. That's a 150-something true shooting. I know I already said that, but I want to get the exact number, but I can't off the top of my head like that. But that's really good. That's a guy you have to have close the game, and he did. And he did a really good job. They were fouling him. They fouled him once. The Bulls were fouling down by like 9 with 15 seconds to go. It was really annoying. But Collison was 8 of 8 from the free throw line, which is what made him so efficient in this game outside of his good 3-point shooting. Just really, he did everything very well. That's what you want to see from him. 2 turnovers is a little, not like, it's not a bad thing for a guy, a point guard playing 35 minutes. Like, okay, 2 turnovers, whatever. But given his assist to turnover last year, you would like to see a little better. But it is what it is. He was plus 13. He was the highest plus minus on the team. He was very, very effective in this game. And they really need that. If they can get Collison to play like this, you know, they can win games when Tyreek is not playing well, which seems to be quite a few of them. That could be a topic for me later in the week. Anyway, which is huge. They need a guard to play well with Corey Joseph out. They can't just rely on a backup defensive-minded point guard to be their only good guard when Vic is out. So Good stuff from Darren Collison. A timely, needed, good performance from a starting guard for them. And hopefully he can keep it up. The Magic are going to start DJ Augustine at point guard, and that's a good opportunity to also get some points. So, a pleasure to see Darren Collison play well, also to see Miles Turner play well, and close with Domantas Sabonis. So just good stuff from guys who you would like to see play well more often, because they've been frustrating at times this year, and rightfully so. People are disappointed in their play, so good stuff from them. But now I want to talk about my favorite run of the game, one that Adam said would happen on yesterday's pod, and it turned out to happen in the most glorious way, and I think it got kind of glossed over in the scheme of an ugly game, but it's worth talking about again. So let's talk about when Jabari Parker was guarding Domantas Sabonis in a second. So if you'll recall, me and Adam were talking about, or we were previewing this game, and we were kind of looking at the Bulls roster and who they started, and we didn't know if Larry would start, and I thought he would when I was guessing what would happen, but anyway, Adam rightfully thought he might not, or he might start, and he didn't end up starting, but he'd started like 17 to 24 games. So Adam said, if Jabari starts with Wendell Carter, I think I would start Sabonis and Turner. I think Sabonis can beat up on Jabari. I was like, oh no, you know, you got to keep him coming off the bench. That's what's working, blah, blah, blah. Well, Adam was way more right. And I agree with him that matchup, Sabonis will just kill the dude. But I didn't think it was worth changing the lineups that have proven to work. And, Jabari came in, I think, with like 5.5 minutes to go in the first quarter and just sparked the funniest run of the game to me, because it was just Adam being so right and everything working out so gloriously. So from the time Jabari checked in to the end of the first quarter, the Pacers had a 144 offensive rating. That means per 100 possessions they're scoring 144 points. Every possession on average they're scoring 1.4 points. That is super unsustainably awesomely good. And I want to say it's fluky, but nothing they did was fluky. It's just that they were killing them with that matchup. So Jabari checks in. First possession, Sabonis runs up. Tyreke Evans is handling the ball, being guarded by Zach LaVine. Those two guys are not good defenders, especially in the pick and roll. Sabonis slams into LaVine. First screen doesn't work. Tyreke comes around the second one. Bang, gets through him. Easy layup. Neither of those guys were ready to defend the pick and roll, and they couldn't really do it. It was kind of outstanding and vindicating for me to see that happen. And yeah, they went right at Jabari. It was great. Possession two. Sabonis gets Jabari on him, and he flips, and he's got great post position on the strong side. No one's with him on that side of the floor. He catches, takes one back down dribble with Jabari on his back, and then immediately a double team comes, because they're like, the Bulls think, rightfully, Jim Boylan, old Pacers coach, thinks, we can't stop Sabonis with Jabari Parker. Let's send a double. And then Sabonis flips it out, and they whip the ball all the way around and do a skip pass, and Darren Collison gets a wide open corner three, and boom, 5 points in two possessions. Then they stop him again. They come down. Sabonis is in the lane, dribbling back down, draws the double, flips it out to Miles Turner. Bang. They get a bucket. That's 7 points on three possessions. Bulls called a timeout. And I was just like, wow. Sabonis can kill these matchups of A, bad defenders, and B, bad moat. Well, not B. This is kind of an addendum. And also defenders who are just terrible, terrible on the inside defenders. And that's exactly what Jabari Parker is. And that is why that worked so well. And it ended up that they got, you know, a bunch more buckets from that time. They got Turner from free throws after Sabonis dumped him the ball inside too. They got a good look for Aaron Holiday from three. They got another Evans layup. Like, things just worked when Jabari was guarding Sabonis, and then it didn't happen for a while, and because the Bulls were like, well, that was stupid. Why did we do that? So they had Jabari kind of mix and match to where he was almost the center and was guarding Turner, or they only had him in when Thad was out there because it's just a different matchup. And then Jabari was in kind of at the end of the game. I want to get this timing right too, but I'm not exactly sure when it was. And I just typed Jabari instead of Parker when I'm looking at the game log. But Jabari was in the fourth for a while, and then Sabonis was in. And it just wasn't working. And then the Bulls tried to cut the lead, and they just subbed out Jabari. And we're like, nah, we'll go with Wendell Carter instead. So Sabonis was forcing a matchup switch for the Bulls in this game. And I love to see stuff like that, where the Pacers' second unit is actually good enough that the Bulls have to alter their rotation and change their game plan. And that is such a luxury to have your backup center be good enough for that to be the case. So great stuff from Sabonis. And I want to briefly touch on something I wrote about Sabonis that I thought was cool. I wrote about the chance that he could win most improved player and sixth man of the year. And I think he has the stats to do it because his BPM has improved the fifth highest from last year to this year. The only four guys ahead of him are Derrick Rose, Furkan Korkmaz, Nerlens Noel, and Quincy Pondexter. And you have to put context around all those guys because Derrick Rose is not going to win most improved player. Derrick Rose has been a very improved player from last year, but a former MVP winning most improved player would just feel so weird. You know, like, I don't even think Derrick Rose wants to win that award. We've all seen that he can play at this level. Furkan Korkmaz is only getting a ton of improvement. He only played 80 minutes last year. It's not hard to improve off of that. Quincy Pondexter went from completely awful to average. So that's not really the recipe to win most improved. So then Nerlens is right there. Sabonis has played about double the minutes of Nerlens. And then also you have like Vucevic and Montrezl Harrell right there. So he has a statistical profile of those dudes, but Vucevic is racking up the counting stats while also being really impactful. He could be an all-star, and that would help his case a ton because I feel like the recipe to win the award is, you know, you go from like a pretty good guy to an all-star, a la Victor Oladipo, CJ McCollum, Giannis, etc. Montrezl Harrell has also just improved a ton, and he's in the running also for sixth man of the year, which is one that I also wanted to talk about Sabonis. And it's similar, a similar group of competitors for sixth man. Montrezl Harrell, Derrick Rose, both been good off the bench. And then, of course, Lou Williams, who, as I wrote, will eventually at some point just have like a week or two stretch of the season where like you just can't stop him and he hits like two game winners and the Clippers are awesome and then fun and you have to watch him every game. And Julius Randle doing a good job off the bench for the Pelicans. So sixth man has a bigger crop of like well-known players. But Sabonis has been as good impactfully as those guys, and his improvement has been large. The trouble thing is, like, he has no narrative, and that's what a lot of these guys ahead of him have. You know, Montrez has the L.A. market, Lou Williams has the L.A. market, and he's won sixth man two or three, I can't remember, three times before already. You know, they're going to get the looks. Derrick Rose is Derrick Rose. He's a big name. And Vucevic, if he gets the All-Star, hell of narrative. Like, Sabonis needs something to get him up in that conversation. And I think that dunk on Joel Embiid helped because not too long after that, Sports Illustrated did their profile on him fitting in an Indy, and that got him some notoriety. So I think a couple more like dominant games or like crazy dunks would help him a lot. But yeah, we'll see if he can win some awards. I think it'll be interesting to see. But he was great on he made the Bulls change their game plan with Jabari, so it was very awesome to see that. But that was a fun, ugly game. It was fun because they won. If they had lost, it would have been a terrible, terrible, awful, ugly game. but I appreciate you guys tuning in tomorrow. Adam will be on to talk about something. I have no clue what it's going to be. I'm sure he'll think of something. He is good at thinking of things to talk about. And then Friday, I officially have confirmed the guest so I can do it. I'm going to talk Magic and Kings, and my guest for the Magic segment is going to be Preston Ellis, really good Magic writer. And one of the few that I actually enjoy reading, so good for him. It'll be fun. He's real plugged in on that team. It'll be fun to watch him and listen to him. So stay on the lookout for that. Thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed this game and this podcast. As always, you can follow me at TEastNBA and the podcast at Lockdown Pacers. And I've never plugged this, but I feel like I need to. Obviously, following me in Lockdown Pacers would help you with your Pacers knowledge. But there, the Lockdown Network has a Twitter account for the whole network called Lockdown NBA Net. That's with an at, actually. It's Lockdown NBA Net. And it automatically retweets every tweet about a team that, if the tweet is from a host of a show or the podcast itself. So you'll automatically see all the Lockdown NBA team shows, and you'll see like news about the team and updates about the team from the host. It's a really cool way to be plugged in on the NBA, so highly recommend doing that. But yeah, sorry for that promotion at the end, but I had to do it. Thank you guys so much for listening, and have a great rest of your day.